Hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, July 15th, 2019, and this is episode 172 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of your San Francisco Giants. And joining me and Eric today is one hell of a Giants offense. My God, what the hell is going on, Eric?
16 runs. I mean, two touchdowns and two two-point conversions. Apparently, Coors Field is not as scary as it used to be. This is just bonkers. Bonkers is the only word I can think of.
Yeah, I know anyone listening to this, the game is going to be long over and probably the second game of today's day-night doubleheader. But in the first game today that started around 11 or so Pacific time, the Giants have just opened the floodgates, continuing this just prolific offense they've decided to show the world. And they are currently in the bottom of the sixth inning, leading 16-1. In fact, the Rockies just got their first run on only their second hit of the day off of Shark. It was a pinch-hit home run by Tilapia. So it's 16-1, and they've pummeled out another four home runs today, including two by Crawford. He's got six RBI, and in fact, the 4-7 hitters today, which are Dickerson, Crawford, Yastrzemski, and Pilar, are 12-16 with three bombs, five doubles, 12 RBI, and 10 runs. What the hell, man? That's a good month combined, yeah. And they're doing this in six innings.
We talk about it all the time of, you know, how the Giants hot board is like a wasteland, a desert wasteland of nobodies. And these guys are laying claim on it like one day into the week. Five doubles is amazing. And I totally see it. Every time I looked up, I felt like there was a ball falling in a gap or it got through and there was enough room for them to run. That's amazing. Eight extra base hits and 16 at-bats. I mean, that's what you want out of the middle of the order. And since it's a doubleheader, the Giants, they'll probably get to rest some people.
My God. This is crazy. The Giants have now scored 90 runs over their last 11 games. It's their most runs in an 11-game span since moving to San Francisco.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
It's also only the 39th time the team has ever scored 16 runs, but they have lost one of those games. It was a game against, I believe, the Padres, in which they were leading 8-0. They blew that lead, and they ended up losing that game 17-16. That would have been a hell of a game to be in. But God damn it, man. Okay, sixth inning, 16-1. I'm going to say this is probably a win, even in Coors Field, but we'll keep it tuned in. Actually, I do have the game playing in the background, so I might just pop in once in a while just to see how it's going. Yeah, see if we can catch lightning in a bottle and see if we can record Crawford hitting another home run.
This is a team, though, that like was barely ever scoring more than seven runs in a single game, five runs in a game. And in the last two games, they put up a six spot against the Brewers yesterday in the seventh. They put a five spot in the first today, a seven spot in the third today. I mean, hitting is contagious. I really truly think that, but I mean, this is not what the Giants were supposed to be doing at any stretch of any part of the year. It's truly something to behold and something to hang our hat on as Giants fans right now. Like, I had a buddy over the weekend say, hey, two out hits, can your boys take care of the Brewers? And I said, yeah, no problem. They're going to keep hitting the ball. And they did. Yeah. That's all they do is hit the ball right now. I mean, they scored, 10 runs on Friday. Here's 16 today. That's 26. You know, that's enough for 2 weeks in the past. And here that's just a game and a half over the past few games.
Yeah, it's been incredible. So, yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, where the Giants kind of reside right now, they're 2-1 since we last recorded. Of course, we recorded right before the All-Star break, so it's been a short week. Looks like they're going to be about 3-1 here. They're 43-49, still last place in the NL West, 17.5 back of LA, still the fourth worst record in the NL, but they're only a game and a half back of San Diego now for fourth place. and the big butt. I like big butts, and I can, never mind. They are now creeping to 4.5 behind the wild card, and it's really, really stoking the fire of Giants fans, very passionate Giants fans on the interwebs, and it's getting quite volatile out there as far as the naysayers who are screaming, don't sell, in fact, buy, we can do this, yay. And of course, I think cooler heads like you and myself still will be like, look, even if all 7 or 8 teams were tied right now, that's still a 1 in 7 and 8 chance. Do you mortgage your potential future of prospects for trade bait for a short season with Bumgarner if he doesn't re-sign, another year with Will Smith, to sacrifice potentially being real good in a couple, 3 years versus the very small chance you have to make the wild card, which is a one-and-done situation anyway this year? And to me, I think it's still clear, and I think Zaidi and Brass are still looking to sell, but there's a lot of fans out there that are getting a little restless.
Well, it's cool, though, because if anything, all this hitting and all this winning is driving up trade value.
Yeah.
Because the Giants get to come to the table and be like, well, you know, maybe we don't really want to trade some of these guys and drive up the price a little bit. And from the way that it's shaping up with how close the National League is bunched with the wild card, and even over in the American League, there's a few teams fighting for it. It's a seller's market this year. And the Giants are definitely going to still be at the forefront of that. Now, they've talked about how they don't need, like, deep minor league, like, single-A and A guys, but they need to fill out the depth at the triple-A level and maybe get major league-ready guys. So, I mean, they might be putting themselves in a position to bargain better, and that could be the overall benefit of this. It's great that the Giants are playing like this. It's unbelievable. I'm having so much fun watching Giants baseball right now. But in the long run, 7 teams – I mean, 4.5 games back of the wild card just means that the teams in front of the wild card right now are not playing well. The Giants are hitting their hot streak at the right time. A month from now, they could be 10 games out, and they really might not have played that bad of baseball. It's just that the other teams are finally realizing their potential.
Yeah, now that's the big thing right there is, the Giants can still play 600 ball the rest of the way and still not make the playoffs because it just takes one other team that's already ahead of them to play just slightly better or continue at 600 ball and they'll still beat the Giants. So,
right.
But hey, we said this last week, at least we're having fun watching this team. And this is just incredible. So let's go ahead and talk about, we'll get back to the All-Star game after we review the Milwaukee series, but they went on the road and you were definitely calling it. You were saying, hey, you know, the Giants are, you know, doing well on the road. They're basically 500. They're 500 exactly right now. And they took 2 out of 3 in Milwaukee. You thought that they were going to hit well, and obviously most teams hit well in Colorado. It's just a matter of if you're going to hit better than the Rockies themselves. And they went in, and they really had a chance at a sweep here. But, you know, that's fine. The first two you could have almost called coin flips, and they split those, and they won the last one. So let's look at game one. The Giants go deep 5 times in that game. But the remarkable thing was Will Smith, who was Mr. Perfect coming into this game, did have a 1-run lead in the 9th, and he ended up blowing it, which, you know, it's going to happen. I don't think anyone is calling for his head at this point, the all-star that he is. But they go right into the 10th inning, and they set it up for Buster Posey with the bases loaded, and man, did he tattoo this ball.
Brewers will play the infield in. And Buster hits a high drive! Center field! He knocks one off the scoreboard, and the Giants take the lead in a big way.
I mean, he hit that way over the center field scoreboard. It was right off the scoreboard itself. It was like 434 feet. It was something to just beholden to see because it was not Colorado. It is Milwaukee, but it was a low pitch too, Eric. It was on the border of the strike zone, and he went down and fished it out and just drove it like a man.
Yeah, he that was probably the best homer he's hit in like a year and a half, 2 years. Kind of like Longo's over the warehouse was the other day. Buster just doesn't seem to be driving the ball like that. And he homered again today, which just blows my mind. That's twice he's homered in four games. Yeah. But not only did he like go down, get the pitch, extend on it, it was a tight situation. They, you know, needed – it was the 10th inning, obviously. You know, to hit the grand slam in extra innings too on a night where, I mean, tip of the cap to Austin and Crawford. They each hit homers off a Hader, and he's like the unstoppable force out there on the mound. And Crawford's especially with two outs in the ninth inning to give them the lead and then allow Will Smith to blow his first save of the year. Mm-hmm. But Buster, he looks better than he's looked. Just he looks healthier than he's looked for probably 2 years now. Maybe his hip finally is rested. The All-Star break, just having a few days off, probably helped him. I mean, this is one of those times Buster not going to the All-Star game benefits him stat-wise and the team-wise. And it was just – it was old-school Buster. And Milwaukee has a great hitter's background. The hitters all swear by hitting there because that back wall just gives perfect contrast to the baseball. And the Giants showed it, five homers in a game. The Giants had just had a streak of like 14 straight games with a homer. This was like the 14th game in that streak. And it's like, the Giants, really? And five homers in a game. I didn't look it up, but it's been a long time since that's happened.
Yeah, it definitely has been a long time. Just to keep you updated in the game, they just are going to the bottom of the seventh. Still 16-1. Alex Dickerson grounded out. He's only 3-for-5 today. So shame on him.
Shame.
Shame. Shame. So they score four in the ninth or tenth, which makes it a fairly comfortable lead with one inning to go. So Boach puts in Melanson, and he does allow a run, but it was inconsequential, and they go ahead and close that out 10-7. But they start the second half just on a roll again, scoring double digits. I mean, it was just so great to see. Game two, they did lose 5-4, but like you wrote here, they had their chances, didn't they?
Yeah, and they had their chances to put the game away specifically. But Dyson kind of blew it up a little bit, and then Maranta wasn't able to hold on. Bumgarner was so-so. I'll confess to not seeing as much of this game as I did the other two games, which was fortunate. I watched a little bit of Bumgarner. I mean, he still struck out six in five innings, but he threw a lot of pitches. It was more Dyson just couldn't get out of his jam, and then Holland didn't clean it up, and Maranta getting tagged. But they showed fight. I mean, they scored two in the top of the ninth. They scored one in the seventh. The Giants continued to score runs late, and they didn't homer, which is why they lost, because apparently the Giants need to hit homers to win, because they've done that every other game since the All-Star break. So they had their chances, and, you know, the Brewers are a good team. They're going to win games like that. That's one of those be competitive but lose it in the end type losses I expected to see most of the season. So well, that was kind of run-of-the-mill game, yeah.
Yeah, they showed spunk. You know, they were leading 2-1 going into the bottom of the eighth. And, yeah, Sam Dyson just didn't have it. He couldn't locate. I actually did watch this game. He just was missing badly. His slider was flat. His fastball got way too much of the plate. And it was, what, three consecutive doubles to lead off the eighth and then another single. Maranta comes in, can't hold it. Milwaukee ends up scoring three and goes up 4-2, but then the Giants show some spunk and get two right back in the ninth inning, in the top of the ninth, including a little flaring double. It was actually really a single, but Lorenzo Cain misplayed the ball in the outfield, which allowed the second run to score, and that tied up the game. Unfortunately, after that, Buster Posey couldn't do anything, and they got out of the inning. But they had another chance to push it to extra innings, but yeah, it just didn't work out in the bottom of the ninth with Maranta. But yeah, one of those games where it was back and forth. Giants had the lead. In fact, it was only the second game the Giants have lost all year in which they had the lead after seven innings. So as it stands right now, well, I guess technically you got to add yesterday's game too. They are 33-2 now in games in which they lead after the seventh inning. So that was only the second time they've lost. So That's a testament to their bullpen, too, because we know that they play close games. It's not like most of the 33 wins, they've been up by eight runs after seven innings. They've been up by one or two. So that is a testament to their bullpen and how solid it has been overall. Dyson's been good overall. You know, Will Smith has been phenomenal. Maranta's been overall good, but he can be a fun ride. And, you know, the guys are human. And so they're going to have bad games here and there. And this is just one of those bad games for Sam Dyson. I'm not going to get on him for that.
Yeah, the Giants, it was it's funny because they usually win the one-run games. They're 18-10 in one-run games this year. So that was, you know, that was just the kind of game where everybody had to hold it together. And on Sunday, Beedy was like a breath of fresh air. He came in, and after giving up an early run to the Brewers, he kind of shut them down until he gave up another run in the on a Yelich homer, and the Giants scored 6 runs in the 7th inning to give him a cushion, and like all was back and right in the Giants' world. Like, you never would have known that the Brewers were the team fighting for a playoff spot this weekend. You would have thought it was the Giants. The way they played, especially just continuing to take pitches and work counts during that 6-run seventh inning yesterday, and the Giants were back on track, scoring 8 runs again to, you know, win big.
Yeah, yesterday I spent 4.5 hours straight in the backyard chopping up wood. I had trimmed all our trees in the back, and I have a little electric chipper, wood chipper, and was cutting it all up and plowing it through. Put a bunch of sunblock on, got my wireless headphones, and went out there. And I listened to the entire Giants game, all 9 innings. And even though it was a long game, I was just, you know, a lot of ice water, staying out of the sun as much as I could. But it was fun. It was fun to just kind of literally have an opportunity to sit back and not watch a game, but listen to a game. I kind of felt like I was a kid again. I had the transistor radio out, you know, listening to Hank Greenwald. Or Lon Simmons, and was just able to really focus and think about what kind of pitch was coming next. Oh, imagining, you know, the descriptions that were being given by, you know, Kipe, who was doing most of the game. It was a lot of fun, especially that 6-run inning where they finally put it all together. So this offense is on a roll, and it's obviously continued into today. In the Rockies, the last 2 games prior to today, the scores were 17-9 and 10-9. Coors Field is now averaging 15 runs combined per game this year, which is their highest ever. So they must have turned the humidor off. I don't know what's going on, but everyone's talking about it again, along with the juiced balls, along with the more powerful, you know, players and launch angle and everything else. It's a laughingstock of baseball again, and it's kind of a shame because you feel like it's a beer league softball game, you know, with these scores. It's not baseball.
It looks like it here at Coors specifically. My goodness. That means they've given up 33 runs in the last 2 games. That's
Yeah, it was 17 yesterday to the Reds.
Wow.
Yeah. And now 16 today.
Giants got some work to do. They got to get another run in. What the hell, man? Verlander brought up the baseballs over the break. Something may be different with them, but like, I don't think it's just making an appreciable difference. I mean, I don't know. Slater hit one last week or 2 weeks ago that when he hit it, it was like, oh, that's a fly out to right. Hey, grand slam.
Grand slam.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was like, where the hell did that come from? So, I mean, I guess there's something to it. I think the shift is playing a lot of part into these home runs. Uh-huh. I think hitters, instead of trying to always figure out how to beat the shift by hitting it the other way, they've just decided to say, screw it, and they're hitting the ball over the shift. And I think that that's part of a reason for the uptick in home runs, too. But, I mean, the data is there. There's supposed to be 500, 600 more home runs this year than ever before. That's just in a ridiculous amount.
Yeah, score update. Ryan McMahon just hit another solo shot off of Samardzija. 16-2. Oh, no. 2 outs in the bottom of the 7th. I better get nervous. So, 3 whole hits for the Rockies now.
They got themselves a safety. Good defense, Rockies.
Oh, man. This is bad, huh? Oh, all right. Gosh, where are we? Well, 2 out of 3 in Milwaukee. Looks like they're going to win the first one here. What's interesting about this game is that, or this day, is it's 4 games in Colorado, including today's day-night doubleheader. And that's traditionally where you're just going to absolutely exhaust your pitching. So Major League Baseball does allow, on days that you do have 2 games, to bring up a 26-man. So they did so. They brought up the pitcher, Coonrod.
Coonrod.
And unfortunately, Evan Longoria was pulled out of yesterday's game prematurely. Austin Slater had to go in, and he was really, really sick. And so he did not look good yesterday. He struck out three times because he has some sort of flu or whatever. But it looks like plantar fasciitis for Longoria. He was placed on the 10-day IL retroactive till – actually, no, I think it did start today. So they called up – who did they call up in his place? It was another pitcher.
Ray Black.
Oh, it was Black. It was Ray Black, right. I'm doing this off memory, not the notes. So, you know, here are the Giants – basically surplusing their pitching by two pitchers for today. And then when Kudron is set back down, they'll have Ray Black up for the next two games because they need the extra pitching. But, you know, Samardzija is doing wonders for the Giants today. Pitching, it looks like, a complete seven innings already today, just absolutely saving the bullpen. Derek Rodriguez is going to be starting game two. Drew Pomeranz is starting game three tomorrow. I mean, it could be a bloodbath out there, but look what the Rockies are facing. They had the same problem. They allowed 10 runs and then 17 runs the last two games against the Reds. They've been chewing through their pitchers like crazy as well. And now today with 16 runs, they're in a much worse shape than the Giants, and they have a horrible bullpen. So it could be just a wacky weekend. It could be Pomeranz gives up 8 runs, but the Giants score 12. I mean, who knows what's going to happen?
Can't put it past the Giants right now with the way they're hitting the ball. They could score 12 apparently at any given moment. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Right now, Shark just got yanked, and he's finally going to the bullpen. I didn't see who he's bringing in, but you got to expect it's somebody just to probably Coonrod to just ride it out for a little bit. There's no need to worry about the bullpen blowing it up this game in a 14-run lead. So the Giants, I mean, the fact that this is such a blowout does make it easier for them this week. And they have 8 games this week. Mm-hmm. So they definitely have to juggle right now. There's no off day to save them at any time. And having a doubleheader at the beginning of the week, especially at Coors, like you said, it could be an absolute killer to the bullpen. And that's not going to be the case so far. But, you know, we'll see what happens when Palm comes out tomorrow. Hopefully the Giants will keep hitting the ball and that won't matter. Because you look at some of these – the Giants – I didn't even mention this. They won 3 series in a row with that Milwaukee series. They won 2 before the break, and then they won that Milwaukee series. That's the first time they've done that all year, won 3 series in a row. And the first time they did it since last year, June 18th to July 1st, when they won 4 straight series. So they won a whole year without winning 3 straight series back-to-back. And, like, they barely won 2 straight series back-to-back during that time. They only managed to do that once. And that was in the middle of June. So the Giants have just been scuffling for so long. That's why all this hitting, all these runs, all this winning, it's just such a breath of fresh air. As Giants fans, we forgot what it was like to be so happy about our ball club.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say. I'm a little shocked that, you know, I'm not watching the game right now, but apparently Shark was removed. He had 92 pitches. He had only allowed 4 hits. There was a single by Mark Reynolds afterwards, but with 2 outs in the bottom of the 7th, I'm a little surprised with a 14-run lead, Boach just didn't let him finish out the inning or at least pitch to 1 or 2 more guys. I mean, he definitely is good for over 100 pitches, but Trevor Gott is in, so I'm wondering if there was another issue, if they realized he was tired or something happened or he was uncomfortable or was suffering from something. I'm not sure.
No, he looks all right on the bench. Boach should have left him out there, finished the 7th. I mean, if he gives up a couple more bangers, you know, that's fine. You still have a 14-run lead right now. But if Gott's going to pitch multiple innings, regardless, that's fine. If he's going to be left out there to let it go to at least 16-10, if that's the case, that's fine. You know what I mean? Let him stay out there. Because the Giants, with the way they're scoring – they've scored the most runs in the month of July. Up until today, it was the second most runs, 65. But you add in these 16 runs, and they're up to 81 runs in the month of July in less than 10 games. This is their 10th game. And they had, going into play today, 18 home runs, which tied for the lead in the majors for the month of July, which they've now blown past with 4 homers today, and the Giants lead Major League Baseball with 22 home runs in the month of July, and I think I might faint.
That doesn't even make sense. And you know what also doesn't make sense? We actually have a sponsor for today's podcast, and so I want to get into that. But basically, to the surprise of everyone, the Giants enter the All-Star break, obviously on fire, and now they continue that with the first, you know, 4 games of the second half. But it's more surprising the fact that they are winning on the strength of their offense. The team is now 8-2 in its last 10. It's averaging 7.8 runs per game over that time. And suddenly they're just 4.5 games back of a playoff spot. Basically, a couple of days ago, they were 750-1 odds to win the NL pennant. But there could be some value betting on the Giants to squeak into the playoffs and make a run. However, Farhan Zaidi is still likely to sell at the deadline, so bettors wouldn't actually be wagering on the Giants team. They'd be wagering on a team that may be without the likes of Madison Bumgarner and Will Smith. And so our friends over at thesportsbettingdime.com think that there's value betting on the Giants to squeak into the playoffs and make a run. And so I urge you guys to check them out. The guys at SBD would like you to go visit sportsbettingdime.com and check out some of their value over there. And it may be worth putting a little bit of small cash on the Giants because they are on a little bit of a hot streak. And if they're still 750-1, you might squeak in and get some cheddar here if they really hit fire.
Back in the day, I used to have my dad put a future bet on the Giants every year because he'd always go to Vegas in March, so I could put $25 on the Giants as a future bet every year. So putting a future bet on the Giants to win it all, that always brings up a good one. So I welcome our new sponsor.
Yeah, well, think about it. Just laying $5 down even, you know? It's like, you're not going to lose anything. But if it's somehow the Giants did catch fire and re-caught that magic and suddenly, you know, they do win the pennant, well, that's a 750 times 5, you know, that's a lot of cash for you, over $3,500. So anyway, yeah, go check them out again at www.sportsbettingdime.com and let us know how they treat you. All right, so update on the game. The Trevor Gott did allow Tony Walters to fly out. He induced the fly out, so they are now through 7, still up 16-2. Okay, let's circle back a little bit for the All-Star break. There was actually two events going on during the break, an All-Star game and a home run derby. Now, the game itself, of course, is back to being an exhibition as of a few years ago. Thank God. That was just a horrible thing when it was, you know, for a home field advantage. Although it did always work out in the Giants' favor, mind you, even though they won it on the road all three times. But that home run derby, man, that was something else. And so we had our picks. And you went with the winner. That was a great choice, bud. Yeah. You went with Pete Alonso, the polar bear.
I was excited to see Vlad Jr. too, and that was my chatter on Twitter that day was, I'm picking Alonso, but I'm rooting for Vlad Jr. And that round between Jock and Vlad Jr., that was the most entertaining home run derby stuff I've ever seen. That was just so fun. It was every other moment was, and I switched to the ESPN2 broadcast. It was less cluttered, and it followed the ball a lot more. That was just, I don't know about you, but I had fun watching it. I felt like a kid in awe of them. And, you know, to have these rookies fighting it out for a $1 million prize when their base salary is $555. That had to have been a thrill for them. That was a lot of fun. Who did you pick? You took Josh Bell, and he did not – I don't think he made it out of the first round.
He was none. He did not even make it out of the first round. Because originally I was going to go with, okay, everyone's picking Vladimir Guerrero, but I don't know if he has the stamina, so I'm going to go with someone else, and that was just dumb. I should have stuck with Vlad. Alonso definitely was not a bad pick either, but – and as it turns out, I mean, Guerrero hit hella more home runs cumulatively than Pete Alonso. But what happened is that Alonso just had enough to win every round. And by the time they got to the final round, Alonso got – he had his highest round, and then Guerrero had his lowest round. And I think he was just beat at that point. And Alonso still had a 30-second bonus window left, so he was definitely going to beat Guerrero. But, yeah, when you go back to that Peterson-Guerrero one, I mean – Guerrero hit 29 home runs in that round for the second round in a row. And you're like, there's no way Peterson's going to catch him. And he just was like, boom, 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 boom. And as he got closer and closer and closer, I don't want the Dodger to win. But I'm like, oh, crap, he might catch him. And, of course, he ties him right near the end. And I'm like, okay, well, this is fun. At least it's a tie. He didn't win outright. And then they go into the next round and they tie again. And then they go into the three-swing playoff and they tie again, and then they go into another three-swing playoff. And what's so funny about that is that Guerrero in that second three-swing playoff, he hit two, and Jacques hit one right away. So I was like, oh my god. And I found myself ironically rooting for Jacques Peterson to hit a home run to tie but not to win. Because I wanted to see it continue.
Keep
I wanted
it going.
To, I was like, how many rounds can they go? And he ended up, you know, he failed on the next two. But that was just, that was so much fun. But you could tell Guerrero was just smoked at that point. And he still hit, whatever, 21 or 22 in the final round. It's not like it was a shabby total. It just wasn't enough for, you know, Alonzo, who was much fresher. He just, he raked.
And Jock made it look so easy. Like, his swing, he doesn't look like he's exerting as much effort as the other guys were. Like, Alonzo is just a lumberjack, and it goes flying. But, like, you could see Vlad really having to work it, and just how natural, though, the explosion to come off is. I love they had those, like, 4D cameras, and they'd, like, spin it around at the point of contact, and you could see the bat was curved because it was whipping, and that's how fast they're swinging, you know, to drive that ball out there. And he started peppering that scoreboard in left field. Vlad Jr. was just it was so much fun. Everybody I saw before the contest, why is Vlad Jr. in there? He's only got 8 home runs. He's not one of the. That's why he was in there.
That's exactly why.
Yeah, it made for seriously the most. We'll remember Vlad Jr. just like Josh Hamilton 10 years ago. He had an unbelievable round at Yankee Stadium, and Justin Morneau ended up winning the whole thing. We'll remember Vlad Jr. We won't remember that Pete Alonso won it. Still, I was happy my pick, you know, came through, but the best show was absolutely Vlad Jock. And I mean, I was on that too. Before it even came out, I was like, this is going to be the best part of the entire contest. It was like the main event before the main event.
Yeah, no, that was a lot of fun. It was totally worth it. One of the better home run derbies that I think everyone has seen in a very, very long time. So kudos to Major League Baseball. And yeah, putting some of the money up front too. So at least it means something to some of the younger guys who, you know, they're not earning a lot yet. And so it actually kind of helps them out. So I'm all for that. So, you know, I'm sure Alonzo's cutting his 0.01% check to you soon. But, you know, look for that in the mail.
I mean, it's double his salary for just swinging the bat one night. That's crazy.
Yeah, he plays a whole season, 6 to 8 months out of his year, you know, plus all the training to get ready for the season. And he earns $500,000, which, you know, is shit ton of money to all of, you know, everyone else. Yeah. And then just one night. Yeah, one night. Boom, $1,000,000. It's just like, wow, that's pretty sweet. Was there is there a consolation prize? Do you know? Was there like $300,000 for Guerrero or anything? Huh.
I don't know that. That's like Survivor, because Survivor
is like all or nothing. Yeah, I would hope they have something for the
other
kid.
If not, he needs a Gatorade.
He worked harder.
Yeah, like that. He's a Gatorade commercial waiting to happen. 91 or 95 home runs or some crap like that. It was unbelievable.
Just insane. Well, then the next night was your Midsummer Classic, the 90th All-Star Game, and it was fine. It was an okay game. It wasn't a blowout either way. The American League did win 4-3. The lone Giants representative did give up a home run to Joey Gallo, just absolutely crushed it. Then the next guy, forget who it was, smoked it to third, but it was an out. So he had one third of an inning, allowed one run. It did end up being the deciding run in the game, but the fun of the matter was that two out of the three Dodgers pitchers that were in the game gave up runs, and the loser was Clayton Kershaw. Thank you.
It's funny. The NL West apparently has horrible pitching. Gallo was sitting there laying in wait on Smith. He tried to get one over first pitch. Gallo was ready for it, and Gallo has been swinging the bat so well. I didn't find it to be the most entertaining part of the All-Star game was when, like, Joe Buck was talking to Freddie Freeman while Freddie Freeman was batting, and, you know, when all the Astros were on the mic. Like, I really, other than that, it wasn't, like, overly entertaining. Like, pitchers pretty much dominated, you know, and it showed with the Indians pitcher getting the MVP award. I don't remember. Bieber, I think, is the
Bieber,
one that got
it. It was a little weird. I mean, he came in and he struck out the side, one inning pitch, and he gets the MVP. It was just odd. It was just like, all right, whatever. So, scoring update. Let's tune in live.
He's going to catch up to that ball, but that ball had some weird action on it. It started slicing away from him. 17-2, Giants. They're one run away from equaling the most runs they've ever scored in this ballpark. Back in 2002, they scored 18 in a win, 18-5. They beat the Rockies that day or night. Here comes Austin Slater now as the pinch hitter for Trevor Gott. Slater, right-handed batter, been under the weather.
All right, so there you heard it from John Miller himself. The Giants now have upped their lead to 17-2, one run away from tying their historic high at Coors Field, and it is the top of the eighth here. Oh, Austin Slater grounded out, so there you go. Middle of the eighth inning, Giants lead 17-2. Nice football score. Fantastic. All right, so stat check. We already talked about this. 22 home runs now in the month of July. Leads all of baseball. You died and gone to heaven. This just doesn't even make sense. It's not like we're halfway through the month. We're not 2 days in. This is great. This is a nice perk.
Everybody's played like 9 and 10 games, so it's not like they've played like 14 and everybody else played 11. Like, everybody's pretty even in the games played. So the Giants are the scariest offense in baseball right now.
Yeah, no kidding. And, you know, at one point we always talk about this run differential. The Giants were minus 90 was their season low, and they've been shaving that. Well, before today's game, they were minus 63. They've already shaved 27 runs off of that, which is absolutely incredible. Well, today they have another 15 runs shaved off of that. So now, as it stands by the minute, they're minus 48. They've gone from minus 90 to minus 48, Eric, in 3 or 4 weeks. They've almost cut that in half. This is unfathomable. They're actually ahead of Pittsburgh now, almost to where San Diego is, ahead of Miami, just about where New York is. So they're kind of getting back to the middle of the pack in terms of run differential.
Yeah, but it could go to minus 60 in game 2.
And it could go right back to minus 60 in game 2 of the double.
I mean, I'm not trying to like crap on a parade, if they lose the next 3 games, I guarantee you they're going to lose them by, you know, more than one run in each game. I don't think it'll happen. I think they'll keep winning, and I think they'll keep scoring. There's something in the water in that clubhouse right now. Yeah. They could shave that down to like 50 by the time they come home on Thursday to face the Mets. If they really keep putting together these good at bats and these good games, it's kind of ridiculous. And because of all this winning, they're only 31 wins away from Bochy's 2000. Like, it used to be a stretch to think that they would get there. And with 70 games left in the season, I guess 69 after today, they're only going to need to go 31 and 39 the rest of the way. Like, that's totally doable. Like, they're bad enough to do that, but good enough to not be worse than that. Giants have put themselves in position to actually get Bochy to 2000 possibly.
So after today's win, they could play 9 games under 500 and still reach that goal. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Not bad.
I was shocked when I looked and I saw the number. I was like, hey, wait a second. You know, you talk about closing the gap and run differential. They're closing the gap for Bochy. Keep winning series. That's what's going to happen. You know, two out of three. Hopefully they at least split here at Coors, you know, and at least split when they get home with New York. But I suspect this might be the most prolific offensive week the Giants have had in a long time.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun playing catch up with the rest of the league. Still near the bottom of the league in most statistics. You can't just catch up in a week, but it's been fun to do. But hey, look, we talked about since June, we didn't have the June swoon, and they were 14-13 in June. They're 8-2 in July, or about to go 8-2 or 9-2 in July. Before today, they were 21-15 since June 1st. So, I mean, this is fantastic. It was fourth best in the major league. So they're putting this together slowly but surely, and they're starting to open up some eyes. And like you said, it's going to put some pressure on the trade value for these guys, because Zaidi and unless the Giants, I mean, literally won, you know, what do they have, another 14 games or so, 15 games until the trade deadline? Unless they won like 12 or 13 out of those games. The Giants are sellers, and so, but it does increase their value because Zaidi can kind of sit back and play with that concept. So he's not going to sell these guys, at least he's stated publicly, for pocket lint and change. So we're hoping that doesn't happen. It's got to be a decent haul. And I know they keep saying, oh, there's the Twins. Oh, we just talked about the Dodgers. That could be their, you know, fourth trade in 50 years. Maybe that would happen. I know he has his no trade list, which includes the Yankees. But that could be waived for a fee. And I'm just curious if the Yankees, who just seem to be that kind of typical, they always overspend, they always go out and get the old crafty veteran or trade for a young stud who is yet to be proven, like a Sonny Gray. They did that a couple years ago. They got Encarnacion earlier in the year. Because, you know, the Yankee fans are clamoring for another championship. They're restless, and they have all this money and the new stadium. And I guess I wouldn't put it out the realm of possibility that the Yankees may force that hand in the end and just pull the trigger and put all the chips in and give the Giants quite a bit, plus maybe pay the waive fee for Bum, and maybe he'll be sent to New York. I don't know.
It makes the most sense. It really does, because when we last talked about Bumgarner trade possibilities, we pointed out some teams want him for the stretch, and some teams, like the Yankees, they don't want Bumgarner so that they can win the pennant down the stretch. They want Bumgarner for the playoffs, period. They're not even worried about winning the division. I mean, with all the injuries and all the problems they've had, they're still going to run away with that AL East, it looks like. And so they would be getting Bumgarner specifically for October, which is why it would not shock me for them to be the ones to overpay the price to get him, knowing that other teams are trying to get him and utilize his talents for a longer stretch of time, where the Yankees are like, we want you to pitch the rest of the season, but we really got you for October. That's the whole reason. And the Yankees are a team that can do that. Not many teams can do that. Not many teams can spend money. Not many teams can utilize capital in the way they do. And that's why it makes the most sense and the best fit. I'd love to see him go to, like, the Twins or something. That would just be fun. But, if the Yankees get him, I totally get it. And I totally get Farhan's side to get the biggest price that he can. Like, there better be some good deep major league ready type talent coming back for Bumgarner. And then we've talked about it. Who the hell knows? He may be back next year. He may want to go to Atlanta. He may want to be closer to home, but I mean, he might come back. Who knows?
I was about to bring up that point, because he does live down in Georgia. I think if he were traded to the Braves, he might just get a taste of being down there. Yes. And it could increase the chances of him signing with them in the offseason, as opposed to being with another team or finishing the year out with the Giants and then getting contract offers from multiple teams, including the Braves. He may not be as inclined. But I think if he kind of plays the summer and playoffs down there, he might go, you know what, this ain't bad. I think I must stay down here.
Right. And that's a real meta way to think about it, but it's dead on, because so as a Giants fan, you kind of root against him getting traded to the Braves.
Yeah. I don't want him to go to the Braves for that reason. And we may be just reading into too much, but I just always think that's a possibility. But the Yankees are not his kind of organization, especially, you know, you got to be shaven. It's New York. It's the whole thing. So, you know, he wouldn't re-sign with them. But, you know, another thing is a year ago, everyone was like, oh, he deserves basically the max. You know, he deserves $30 million a year, whatever it is. He's had a little bit of a step back this year. There's a little bit of some signs of aging and what have you. And I think it depends on what he does the rest of the year and into the playoffs if he's traded and plays with a contender like that. I mean, if he writes another World Series chapter with someone, yeah, his trade value or his contract value is through the roof. But either if he finishes out the season with the Giants or he finishes it with a playoff contender and let's say flames out and just has a horrible postseason, you know, his contract value probably isn't as high as it would have been if they had signed that extension or if they had offered that extension that they talked about a year ago. And so I do wonder if it goes into next year if the Giants were to offer him a contract, but maybe less than what they originally would have a couple years ago. But then someone like the Yankees or the Braves or someone else steps in and gives him that max contract. If he would follow his heart, because he said he wants to finish in San Francisco. Or if he would follow his, you know, financial security in that regard.
Well, I mean, with Farhan, if it was still like the Bobby and Brian Sabian era, and they were really running things, yeah, they'd be giving him the money regardless. And I think the Giants are less likely to overpay at this point.
Absolutely.
So unless Bum wants to settle somewhere in like the 15 million dollar range, I think is where it would, because the more I look at teams that Farhan's put together, aside from like Kershaw's gigantic contract, there's no gigantic crazy contracts on the books. Nobody's really over like 15, 17 million. And I think he's going to want to do the same here. So if Bum's willing to take a hometown discount to come back to the Giants, it's possible. But I think it's going to be hard to do. I really agree.
I think that's the only way is hometown discount. He says, sure, that's fine.
Because somebody else is going to offer him more. They just are. I don't think the Giants are in the business. They're not in the business of paying their stars anymore. It's just – and it's time for that, which is the frustrating part, because it'd be awesome to pay Crawford, Posey, and Bumgarner, you know, tons of money just to be as good as they once were. But the reality is they're not as good as they once were. So you can't pay them for what they've done. You got to start looking to pay them for what they can still do.
Yeah, and what's crazy about it is all of the, quote, thank you contracts the Giants have given out to Timmy and Buster and Kane and Crawford, they have yet to do that or had the opportunity to do that with Bumgarner because they locked him up so long ago at a relatively cheap contract. And wouldn't that be ironic? They're probably their most prolific and important postseason and World Series hero is the only one that actually doesn't get paid as a thank you versus all these other kids.
It's just crazy. Really weird. Yeah, it is. The timing of it's weird. Like, he got caught in this little bit of a vortex, you know, with his timing on his contract and management changing. It does. It doesn't sit like – it's not that it doesn't sit right, but it just feels weird that everybody else got rewarded. And like you said, Bumgarner was probably the biggest horse of them all, and he's not getting the same reward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just shows you baseball is all about timing. And I read a nice article, I might put it in the show notes, about how there are some superstars or up-and-coming superstars who are under, you know, lock and key for 7 years, like Acuna and Albies and all these guys under the Braves and others who are signing these contracts for, you know, $5 million a year, $7 million a year, when most of the league is going, oh, my God, are you crazy? Like, you're worth so much more than that. But they've come back and said, hey, yeah, maybe I'm worth more than that, but it was more important to me to get the security of the long contract so I could take care of my family rather than bet that I'm going to be worth more in a couple of years and sign the bigger contract. So it's an interesting game that, you know, agents and teams and players have to think about and play. And, you know, Bumgarner at the time, no, he wasn't worth $30 million a year, but he definitely got took a hometown discount to play with the Giants for, you know, that 7-year contract. And it's worked out very, very well for the Giants. But, you know, still earning $14.5 million a year ain't no shabby thing, okay? He's fine.
Nope.
He's doing fine. I don't have to cry about that.
Damn California taxes.
Yeah, there's that too. All right, so injuries, we talked about it already. Longo's on the 10-day injured list due to plantar fasciitis. Dickerson has been battling back issues, and he did play today, but it does give you a little pause for concern because he does, you know, he's had a long history of issues, including his back. And he's been interviewed saying, yeah, I have this bulging disc thing. It's basically been with me my entire career since college, you know, and it flares up and it goes away and it's fine. And you're kind of like, okay, I hope so. Because he's been such a spark plug.
He's not playing tonight. I can't see a guy battling back issues. It'll probably stiffen up on him during the break between games. I can't see him starting later tonight. But I hope to be surprised. Maybe the warm air that's in Colorado right now will help.
Yeah. Let's see. Score update, still 17-2, but the Rockies have loaded the bases in the bottom of the eighth with two outs, however. Ray Black is pitching, and who is up? Ian Desmond is up. He has an 0-1 count. So, anyway. Hell, even if it's a grand slam at 17-6, we're not going to worry about that right now.
Nope.
All right. Who's hot? Who's hot, Eric?
I decided to look at the month of July because, you know, with the All-Star break, July is now, what, half over, but it's only about 9-10 games in. And the hottest Giant so far in the month of July is the guy who just went on the 10-day injured list. Evan Longoria hit 400 this month with 6 homers. He's scored 9 times. He's driven in 12 runs. It's a 1.067 slugging, just slugging, and a 1.537 OPS, which is like 300 points higher than a Barry Bonds season. And so he's been better than Bonds for half a month. Longo, it's just, I don't know where it came from. And now that he's hurt, I don't know where it's going to go. But it was nice to see Longo finally hit that hot stretch. I mean, finally hit that hot stretch that we've all been waiting for. And right. Now he's hurt, so who the hell knows what's going to happen. Austin Slater, you mentioned yesterday he struck out 3 times. He was sick as a dog. You could see it standing at the plate, waving at pitches. Like, all pitchers had to do was throw him 3 sliders low in the zone, and he was going to swing over them and go back to the bench, and it was fine. So he's still hitting .391 in the month of July with 3 homers, 3 doubles. And he's driven in 12, and 7 of his 9 hits have been for extra bases. He's been like a shot in the arm. He's part of the reason the Giants' offense is so hot. Like, these numbers are – they're like crazy bonkers for the Giants. Like, they're not supposed to hit that well. Like, even Belt, he's hitting .324 in the month of July, but that's like nothing. That's like 4th, 5th on the list. And he's got 1 homer, which he hit yesterday. And Donovan Solano, who fresh off his 10-game, 11-game hitting streak, he's hitting .346 in the month of July. He's homered, and he scored 6 times. So he's been a great plug-and-play in the middle of the infield.
Yeah, he's been great. I actually have been it's been a lot of fun watching him, and he's been a little spark plug. And I mean, there's a little bit of an argument now for him to start getting a little more playing time than Joe Panning, just see what happens, or, you know, ride the hot bat like Bochy has had a tendency to do in the past. But I figure, why not? I mean, in fact, he's the only one, well, but 2 people, he's one of the only 2 making the who's not list again. But Panning is hitting .179, 5 for his last 28 with no extra base hits. So it's not going to hurt. I mean, you know, why not? I mean, the guy isn't making $20 million. He's not, you know, a superstar. I don't have any issues with that.
I don't either. Panic did hit a double today. He actually has 2 hits on the day today, so good for him. Coors Field cures what ails you. But he still seems like the only guy lost at the plate. And I was shocked to see that Pablo was coming into today was 3 for his last 17. You never feel like Pablo's in a cold stretch, just because he still had a homer during that time, and I believe drove in a couple runs. But I was a little surprised to see that. And he's going to have to play a lot more now with Longoria out. So hopefully Pablo is not the cork that goes into the top of the Giants offense.
Yeah, he's 0 for 3 today. I'm going to see if I can catch this live. It's 2-2 with bases loaded and Black on the mound.
Here's Black. On top, he throws. Another foul, back and out of play. Another 100-mile-an-hour fastball there to Ian Desmond.
Throwing triple digits.
Still 2-2. He does not want to get to 3-2 with Desmond. Murphy at third. Tapia, the runner at second. Hampson at first. 2-2 pitch. Swung on a miss. He struck him out.
Nope.
Or did he? Wait a minute. The ball was dropped by Buster Posey. He picked it up and stepped on home. But the plate umpire signaled that the ball was foul tipped.
It was.
David Rackley now is answering.
Are you watching this too?
The Giants dugout.
Yes.
Bruce Bochy about it.
It was tipped.
Good to know.
We're looking at a television replay. I mean, it didn't look to me like the ball hit the bat. Here's the stretch again, the 2-2 pitch. Blowing outside with a slider. 3-2. Really, watching this at bat right now, it's as if Desmond has just said the fastball or nothing. If he throws him a slider in the strike zone, he's got him. He's taken every single breaking ball. But now it's a full count. And they'll all be running. Murphy from third, Tapia from second, Hampson from first. 3-2 the count with 2 down. There they go, the pitch. Swung on and missed. He struck him out with a low fastball to retire the side. That's the 4th straight time that Desmond has struck out. It wasn't easy, but a scoreless inning for Black. And we go to the 9th. Austin, Posey, and Solano are the D-ups. The Giants 17, the Rockies 2 on the KNBR Northern California Honda Dealers Radio Network.
All right.
That pitch was only 99. Only 99. What the hell, Ray? Yep.
Coming in for an easy 1 inning. No problems. whatsoever. Love it. All right, so no minor league report this week. I am going to try and get up to San Jose. I do want to see Barton Ramos before they depart for upper divisions and upper leagues. That would be a lot of fun. I have been, you know, to San Jose in many, many years past. I saw Buster Posey. I saw Pablo Sandoval. I remember seeing those guys play when everybody was buzzing and talking about them. And now to see them as, you know, kind of Giants legends is kind of cool to kind of been a witness to at least a game that they played in San Jose when they were just hot prospects, you know, and to see where they've gone since then. That'd be pretty cool. Coming up, we do have four in Colorado, including two today. We got Rodriguez pitching tonight, Pomeranz tomorrow, and Sean Anderson on Wednesday. Then they come back home for four against the Mets. And the Mets have not been playing too well. So if the Giants could parlay either a split or three out of four in Colorado and come home hot, I mean, who knows what can happen? I mean, this could be a fun, another fun week of Giants baseball.
Yeah, that's why I'm kind of predicting that this is going to keep up, and the whole fervor over maybe being buyers and not sellers is going to stay up this week. Yeah. And I get it. I'm curious to see where the Giants are next week when they play a contending team like the Cubs. I think that will be the series that really gives them a litmus test on whether or not they are a good ball club or if they're just a ball club getting fat right now. Because the Brewers had not been playing well lately. They had a stretch of 31 games against teams with losing records, and they only won 9 of them. So the Giants just beat up on a struggling club. The Cardinals before that are hovering around 500. The Rockies here, obviously, giving up 17 runs in back-to-back games. Not a good team. Excuse me. The Mets, as we've seen, they've fallen behind the Giants, so obviously not a good team. So I think we'll have more high-powered offense. The Mets will probably shut them down a little bit, and the fact that they're at home will tamp down the runs. But expect more. Oh, look at this. This is Mark Reynolds pitching, position player pitching for the Rockies.
All pitcher. Position player pitching alert.
Yep, Tyler Austin just popped out to right field, too. How about that?
Pushing it still further over toward the foul line.
I love it.
In to make the catch over near the foul line.
I'm ahead of you.
Mark Reynolds coming in to pitch. I love it.
Yeah, so the Giants, wait. I mean, look at this. They'll keep hitting.
Okay, is Posey going to come up? Okay, if Posey's up, yes, I'm going to listen to this. Okay, here we go.
Did they say that this is only the third time in Rockies history that a position player has pitched?
How is that possible?
There's the pitch to Posey, and it hits him.
Ah!
67 miles an hour. What, did he try to throw a curve? What was it, his knuckler? Curveball? What?
Right on the hip.
Posey's laughing at him.
Yeah, he is. 67 mile an hour.
So Buster got hit right in the back. And Reynolds thought it was also pretty hilarious. Okay, so my, I don't know what that was supposed to be, but it didn't really work. So here is Solano. And he called strike on the outside. And the umpire, I think, decided, close enough with a 17-2 score. And it looks like a big rain system is headed in this direction. I checked my Weather Channel app. There's a foul out of play off the right field line by Solano, who walked in his only other plate appearance in the seventh. We're in the ninth inning. The Giants leading 17-2.
This is always
Posey
classic
first,
when this
and
happens.
Solano takes low and outside. 82 miles an hour that time. He reared back. Got a little extra on it.
I have
Solano in the
been...
third spot in the order where Pablo started. Pablo was 0-3 with a sacrifice bunt while he was in there. Here comes Solano. Hits a ground ball right up the middle. Base hit into center field. Posey over to second, and he'll hold there. Hit number 20 for the Giants. And now Alex Dickerson will come up.
20 hits, ladies and gentlemen.
Dickerson has singled home a run. He's hit two doubles and grounded out twice. He's 3-for-5.
Hey, we never get to do this, Eric. This is kind of fun.
Driven in one.
I've been the umpire in a 17-2 game who just calls anything close to strike just to get the game.
There's no activity in the Giants bullpen. I think they want Ray Black. When they put Black in there, they wanted him to go two.
Yeah, I've been in a situation too. I umpired when I was – oops, I – actually totally hit the wrong button here. I umpired when I was much younger.
And the count is 2-0.
When I was 16, 17, and in those blowouts, yeah, you tend to call things that are
Here's the pitch.
Not exactly in the strike zone.
Swinging a foul.
Just to help the other
team. I remember doing a game in Arizona.
I've laughed about years it with ago, players. I'm like, swing the bat, man. We all got to go home.
Yeah. Come on, dude. It's like, just swing it.
The D-backs in the ninth inning brought in Mark Grace to pitch, their first baseman. There's a ball very high. And he did the whole thing for laughs. And David Ross was a rookie for the Dodgers, the catcher. There's ball four high and outside, and the bases are loaded now. A walk to Dickerson.
Here's Crawford's shot at the third homer.
Oh, yeah. Okay, David you're right. Okay, one more hitter. Let's listen to Crawford, see if he can get nine ribbies today and three bombs. Might as well.
But it definitely hit a home run. And that was his first major league home run. And Mark Grace, after the game, said, I really want to apologize to David Ross. Because, guys, really, those are special moments. Your first home run in the big leagues. I fear I ruined it. There's a ground ball by Crawford through the middle of the overload on the defense. Base hit into center field. Two runs will come in to score. Posey from third. Solano from second. Dickerson stops at second. And Brandon Crawford has his seventh and eighth RBIs of the day.
Well, it wasn't three, but it was two.
19-2 Giants, the most RBIs that Brandon Crawford has ever had in a big league game. His career record, it's a five-hit game with eight RBIs. And the most runs the Giants have ever scored in a game here at Coors Field in Denver. Yastrzemski will come up now. And Stephen Vogt has come out on deck.
Well, how about that, ladies and gentlemen? 19-2, and it just keeps rolling. Brandon Crawford with five hits and career-high eight RBI today, and they are probably going to add a couple more on here. So, wow. Anyway, back to the podcast. You've been dealing with recluse spiders, haven't you?
Oh, my God.
What the hell, man? That's scary crap.
It is. Like, thankfully, they're just sectioned off to one part of the house, it seems, but that is the living room area, so it hasn't been a comfortable time here lately. We brought in an exterminator, but we're still doing other stuff. It's been on edge. It's creepy. I want to burn down the house and walk away. Like, literally that creepy, these spiders, and when you have an infestation and multiple, it's kind of scary.
Yeah, so no, Brandon Recluse is no joke. I mean, we have our black widows out here, but typically we don't find them in the house. We find them in the garage, in the yard, right? Because they don't like being where people are, and they like to be in warmer, drier environments. But and even if I were to get bit by one, it wouldn't be life-threatening. But, you know, recluses are a little different. They're a little bit more dangerous, so hopefully.
Yeah, I had to kill one in the house. I had to actually kill one, and then they decided to take over my lawnmower in the back, so... It hasn't been pretty at all. It makes for a tough sleep schedule because, like, I mean, it's creepy, you know? There's no way around it. It's creepy. And you're worried about...
It's just creepy.
Yeah, you're worried about something crawling in, and I haven't been on a normal schedule. So I make no promises on this week in Giants history because I've been dealing with so many things between spiders and brothers-in-law and storms that, I make no promises. Hopefully I'll have something out this week. Just I haven't been in a normal rhythm of a regular week in like 6 weeks. And when you finally feel like you have your house back and then all of a sudden you have a spider infestation, it's you're right back on edge and you're right back. It's not your house anymore. It's the spider's house, and they're my new master. So,
well, the arachnophobes just got a little heebie-jeebies on the podcast, I'm sure, including myself. I'm starting to like my back's itching and everything. Well, yeah, the Giants. Like go ahead.
The wife keeps asking. The wife keeps, you know, she keeps worrying. She's like, you know, I'm sorry. You know, I'm free. You know, I'm worried about these spiders. I'm like, no, man, me too. Like, I can handle killing your run-of-the-mill spiders. I've killed plenty of black widows here too. But these things, they look like movie spiders. So it kind of creeps you out. There's no other way to put it.
No joke, man. Well, the Giants did not pour it on. The next two guys did get out, but the Giants finished the day, unless the Rockies score 17 runs in the bottom of the ninth, with 19 runs, 21 hits, an absolutely demolishing of the Colorado Rockies. So good times, Eric. Good podcast. Good time to be on air with them. Well, you can follow us collectively at TorchaCast on Twitter, like us on Facebook. Go find us over there. Check out our website at TorchaCast.com, where we post all our articles and our podcasts. If you're listening to this, you know where to find your podcast, but we are available throughout whatever podcast feed and service that you enjoy. You can follow us individually at 2OutHits for Eric. That's with the number 2OutHits. Myself at ChadK21. All right. Well, I think that's going to be it for episode 172. A good one, a fun one. I think 173 might have some more good stuff to talk about. You have anything else to wrap up with, Eric?
Oh, no, not at all. I look forward. Next week will be fun. For me, it's leading up to Cubs-Giants. And you know that's always a special time for me. Yesterday was hilarious. Since the Cubs and the Brewers are fighting right now, seeing Giants fans and Cubs fans all tweeting excitement at the same time, because as the Giants started killing the Brewers, the Cubs started killing the Pirates. It was just weird. My whole timeline was all happy.
You're like, what?
Everybody was, yeah, it was like, these are not the fans I know at all. So I look forward to next week. I think we'll have another good week of Giants baseball, and I'm glad as Giants fans we get this time, because it's not going to be like this come September.
Yeah, it looks like I will be going to the Giants game either Friday night or Saturday afternoon. However, it will be as purely as a fan with my family. We're going up to the city this weekend to enjoy some time. And so we'll be doing that. And I do hope I can cover one of the Cubs games the following week, because that would be a lot of fun and an important series. A good test, like you said, a good litmus test for the team. So look forward to that. Well, for Eric, this is Chad signing off for episode 172, and we'll see you next week for episode 173. Until then, a-boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TorchaCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TorchaCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TorchaCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills, saying we'll see you next time.